say the simplify and systemize are probably the two next things, especially with the change of AI. We have so many different softwares that we subscribe to. It's like, what can we bring in internal? How can we all bring it back to just one, which is something we're looking at as the future grows. But for us to really go from where we're at right now, number 24 in the country to number 10, our systems have to be so tight.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story.
Mark, where is home for you? Where are you at right now?
I live in Reading, Pennsylvania, right outside, about 45 miles up the Schuylkill River from Philadelphia. How about you both?
Oh, nice. Both of us here in Salt Lake, born and raised, actually.
Corey lives in the north end of the Salt Lake Valley, and I live in the south end. And Mark, it's probably worth some of that background that Corey and I have been friends since the sixth grade. So we're not just both from here. We both have known each other since we were prepubescent, for sure.
You said the sixth grade?
Yep.
So were you like in the same class? Was one of you the class bully and the victim, or?
Tommy was the popular kid.
Yeah. No, Corey was the year older than me. So, but we have, we both have siblings as well. Both our younger brothers are the same age. So they went to school together, older siblings, whereas a couple that are a little older than mine. But so yeah, we kind of crossed in multiple different paths, but good friends, middle school, high school. Again, he was always 1 year, a little bit further ahead, played hockey together in high school, built our first cars together in auto shop at Highland High School. So yeah, all phases of life and then thereafter as well.
How long after graduating high school did you come together and create a company together? Was it like right away after college? How did that work?
Well, Tommy went to college. I barely graduated high school. So I was that guy that as soon as I got out of high school, I just got into a sales profession. I was going to sell cars for just a year to support my racing habit. I was racing motocross and street bikes back then. And then got sucked into the car business and was ultimately in it for about 15 years. Owned a couple of car dealerships towards the end. I had partnership in a Ford store, partnership in two large used car dealerships, and then started, which was called then CB Aviation, the aviation company back in 2009. Tommy was, he'll tell you about his career. He went a total different path than I did. 2009, started helping people just buy and sell airplanes. Had no idea what I was doing, just cold calling aircraft owners and just use the sales skills to help them start our brokerage company that then grew into buying a couple FBOs. And the company started growing and picking up steam. And then it was about 2017, Tommy?
Yeah. 18.
17 is when we started the fractional program. And then really what happened, Mark, is I had a really poor experience when I got out of the car business with business partners. Like it was worse than my regular divorce. Like it was horrible through mediation and two who I thought were my best friends, like ultimately ended up screwing me. Long story short. So I made a promise that I wasn't going to have another business partner. But then I knew as this business kept scaling and growing so fast that I needed someone with Tommy's skill set that I didn't have. And there's only a couple people in this world that I would trust with this baby of this company. So that's when I called Tommy and said, hey, come just consult with me, show me, like get into my books. They were a complete mess. And he did that for free for a year, just helping me out. And I could see it in his eye. He was kind of getting more intrigued on it. And so then I was just like, let's just do this together and blow this place up. And so gave him a chunk of the company. And then then it's been awesome. Like it's one of the very best things I did for this company, which actually came from reading the book Traction. And it's like I needed to find the integrator for me for sure. Tommy, tell them about your story.
Mark, my idea of from a really young age was to, you know, be like a Fortune 500 CEO. So it was always kind of a path of mine to go the educational route because you can't really bypass a lot of those by not doing that. So went right into the University of Utah. I had a finance and business administration, just a dual major. And I finished that. I had a long career in high school, like Corey, well, actually in college, but I started in high school. I got involved in the wireless industry. So I was a big part of a local company that was founded here. One of the first five employees hired, it's called Spring Mobile. We were the largest dealer for AT&T in one of the largest in the country. Long story short, I went to school, was selling cell phones through all that as a regional manager, VP of sales. I graduated, things were going great and the company was growing. But I kind of figured that the owners, which are the original three founders, I was hired on to help run this company that the original, the money behind it was really the one that started the company, but didn't really do any operations. And then they ended up hiring their investment banker to run the company. He had no experience in wireless. And then they hired the company that they bought that went bankrupt as their vice president, VP of sales. And I came on right after that as the regional manager. Fast forward 8 years later, they were getting ready to sell. The industry was going through a lot of consolidation. I've been in wireless again since 1997. I decided I needed to go for my next step in my career to go back and get my MBA. So I went into graduate school in 2008. Finished that in 2010. And I thought to myself, it's the time of my life. I've done well. Let's go start my own wireless company. So I actually picked up, moved my family, my wife and my two kids down to San Antonio, Texas at a non-compete locally with AT&T. So I moved down to Texas and started Verizon Wireless dealerships down there. So I was an owner and operator, spent 2.5 years down there building that business, had a little bit of a life-changing incident in my life. Long story short, sold the business. Moved back in 2013, 12 to 13, and I had an opportunity during that time. I knew the company was going to sell. The ownership was looking to get out. Well, one of our big investors was a Fortune 500 company, and that was GameStop Corporation. So GameStop Corporation ended up buying our Apple business first, and then they ended up coming back and buying the rest of the wireless business, which seemed like a perfect career path for me. I planned on being a Fortune 500 CEO. GameStop comes into the picture. They recruited me to come back. So I joined GameStop as one of their 25 executives running one of their biggest divisions called Tech Brands Division with a group of people from the original founders. And I spent all that time there until 2018. And then the CEO got diagnosed with a brain tumor and he actually passed about 5 months later. So the company got Fortune 500 company, publicly traded. They were in a bunch of shuffling of seats. They ended up selling off our division to our biggest competitor in Houston. And just kind of, you know, things happen. Life happens. And I ended up leaving there. I was the last employee on after 170 terminations over 2 years of all the group that we helped build up here locally and decided I was going to do something different. So I then went and I was the chief revenue officer for a wireless company out of the Northeast called the Wireless Experience Group. And then Corey at that same time was starting to grow the fractional side of the business. And Corey and I, again, have been friends our whole life. So he would reach out to me frequently and check in on how things were going. And we ended up having lunch in December of 2019. And Corey said, "Hey, you know, I need some help. Can you help and see if I have any interest?" Because I was consulting for a couple other different companies as well on the side. And, you know, the rest is history. We went through the pandemic together about 4 months later when that started. And from that point, you have to figure out how you're going to keep the doors open. So I got into the deep, dark, you know, secrets of our financials as well, including going through an audit, a sales and use tax audit in the first 4 months of me starting. So from that, I felt like I knew enough about the business to where I could help. Where it needed help. And, you know, I thought it was an opportunity for me to keep my family here for longer and work with a dear friend and build something that was super unique. So that's how I got here.
So really interesting story. And just for our listener, you use the acronym FBO. Can you tell us what that is? Can you tell us the name of your company and give me exactly what it is that you do for your customer today?
So FBO stands for fixed base operator. Basically, if you think about it, it's just where the private jets park and get their fuel maintenance or hangar there. And our business is called SkyShare. And SkyShare is a private jet company with our headquarters here in Utah. And we do multiple facets within the private jet world. Fractional ownership is the biggest department within our company, but we also do charter, aircraft sales, aircraft management. So if someone looks to and they want to buy their own airplane, we can not only help them buy the asset, but then stand up the flight department, hire the pilots, oversee all the maintenance, and then they can generate some revenue from it by chartering it into our fractional program or to the public. And then we have a couple FBOs that fuel the airplanes. one here in Salt Lake, just south of the International Airport that we just took over a couple months ago, which was a big step for us. And then also a smaller one in the Bay Area. So pretty much everything in the private jet space, from charter to fractional ownership, all the way up to full aircraft ownership management.
Now, coming together from two different career paths, merging together and moving this business forward, tell me a little bit about your values, your core focus, and your niche.
Kind of a funny story, actually. Right before Tommy joined, I was in one of our jets in Southern California trying to sell a fractional ownership program to a very high net worth individual, serial entrepreneur. And he sat down with me and he's like, "Corey, I don't really care to see the airplane. Like, I want to sit down and know you and your operation and your company culture and all that." So sat down. His name was Frank. Very, very sharp, very to the point guy, though. And he's like, "Corey, tell me about the company. How'd you get it started? How long?" He's like, "Okay, tell me your core values." And I reached for my pocket and he goes, "Stop." He's like, "If you're the founder and CEO of this company and you have to reach into your pocket to read me your core values, and I'm going to guess there's more than five, they don't mean anything. They don't mean anything to you. They don't mean anything to your company." And he had lots of points like this. He was actually he ended up buying in, but he said, "Do you mind? Can I help, like, give you some advice? Cause I see you're very ambitious and you want to make stuff right and do it." So he told me about EOS. He told me about Traxion. And he said, "This is something that I really think that would be good for you and your company. And you need to get rid of your 10 core values and you need to start from scratch and really decide who you are, who you want the company to be, and what you want it to look like." And it was perfect timing because this is right when Tommy and I were in high-level conversations about him joining the company. So we started from scratch. We took an EOS implementer down for a two-day initial, and we had, I think, seven people on our executive team, which was way too many. So we shrunk that down since then. But we sat there and spent all day to come up with the four core values. And for us, they don't have one with more weight, but we always kind of start with deliver the wow. In our business, people expect, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars with us, depending on the circumstance. There's already really high expectations. And so it's like, what can we do as a team to deliver the wow where the expectations are already so high with the product or service that we're delivering? And I tell our team all the time, people will remember how you make them feel more than what happened or what was actually said. And so we have our team that really focuses on delivering the wow. If we find out there's a special flight, meaning a kid's birthday or anniversary, our team will decorate the aircraft. The pilots make it a really cool experience for all of them. The second core value is being solutions focused. Especially being in aviation, there is so many variables that are out of our control, and weather, planes breaking down, passengers being late, catering not showing up, whatever the case is. And we want to build, I feel like we've done a really good job, not perfect by any stretch, but done a great job of creating a team and a culture that we're focused on the solution and not the victim mentality of focused on the problem and it's not my job and my manager handle it. Like, we tell our team all the time, if you say this isn't your job, this isn't the company for you, because we're going to be all working together on the solution. The third is fueled by passion. We're looking for people that don't want to just punch a time clock and then go home. Like, we want them to thoroughly be involved and passionate about what we're doing. Doesn't mean you're passionate about flying an airplane, but you're passionate about how we take care of our team, how we take care of our clients, and really living the core values as a whole. And then the last one is team alignment. And we have a big picture at our Ogden location of an inlet of a jet blade, a jet engine with all the different blades. And on every single blade, it has one of our other departments, pilots, mechanics, accounting team, all the way around. And the whole goal of that is for everybody to realize that it takes this whole team, all the different departments working together, because if one of those engine blade breaks, the whole engine stops. So the core values, I do believe that we've done a great job with that. Again, we can always be better, but it's fun for me, Mark, when I walk down the hall and they don't know I'm coming and I can hear our team saying, "Hey, okay, guys, we need to be solution focused," or "How are we going to deliver the wow?" Or we really try to ingrain that within the DNA.
I'd add to that, Mark, on my end would be, I came from a very a locally grown, very successful company that the founder, the one thing that the founder did, because he didn't know wireless, but he knew how to invest and he knew how to recruit the right people, is we created those values. We didn't have, I know we didn't use EOS back then, but we kind of created our own operating system, management operating system. And when I joined and we were at this meeting, I can tell you this. So the Spring Mobile has a song. We'd start with the Spring Family song. And I'm not going to sing for it because I'm not a good singer. It just goes like, we are the Spring Family. We're happy, happy as can be. We are always having lots of fun. I could go down this whole thing. Like I memorize it to this day, right? For me, that's all I've ever been a part of. Like every company I've been a part of was ingrained in culture. We had these values. And so to me, I knew that was kind of the core focus. And then when I went to the chief revenue officer position in the Northeast, they were very similar. That's why I joined the company. The culture was what drew me there. The industry was already the same, but the reason why I left the other company when GameStop sold was we were countercultures. They were opposite of what we were used to. And so that wasn't a good fit for me. So anyway, that part was really important to me. And then as we continue to evolve, we started saying, well, how do we make sure it's part of everything that we do? And so just before this meeting, we had our new months onboarding for our new employees, which we have larger and larger sets. Back in the day, we'd have one or two people. We'd just put a new hire training out there to get people started. I mean, just like any company would when they started, right? That now we have recruitment teams and we have onboarding teams. And then we bring our executive team in for about an hour and we go through and we introduce ourselves and we talk to our employees directly. And it's pretty much all about our culture and our core values and not just saying them, but like how we live them in each department. And so, and Corey just literally did that whole spiel 1 hour ago. So it's something that we do and it's not something I can honestly say that we don't just say, and it's a card we pull out or we have them on our walls and no one knows about them. It's a part of everything that we do. And I think that's part of what keeps us kind of heading in the right track, right? Heading north always. And sometimes we stray off of the cadence a little bit, but you always try to come back to that. And so, see, those would be my examples that I'd add to what Corey said of how we've incorporated what they actually mean and that we truly believe in what we say that we're going to do and who we are at the foundation of each of us individually and as a company.
I can't agree more. The culture of a business is so important to attract the right people, to attract the right customers, to really enable you to break through that ceiling, to grow and scale by really just living and doing everything that you just said. But I'm curious your thoughts on companies that don't have a culture or they have one that they're not particularly proud of. Maybe it's a little bit toxic. Do you think it's possible for people to turn that around? How would you go about doing that? And what advice would you give to somebody who they're like, oh man, I hear this core value speech. I hear how, man, I want a song.
Yeah.
How would you go about doing that? Is it possible or do you have to start over? What does that look like to you?
I mean, it's definitely possible, right? When we were an example of that, right? I mean, we had some values, but it wasn't lived. It wasn't breathed. It wasn't really shared. And I think how we went about it, again, helped by the EOS platform in general, helped us kind of go, well, you know, one, I would say, as Corey learned as well, and I knew that too, is, you know, five max. And then really look at the makeup of the employees that you have, the teammates that you have, the founder that you have, and say, it's something that shouldn't, it might evolve. But often a lot of the sims don't evolve too far from its general path, even over a 10 and 15 year period, right? And so I think using the framework is one thing, and being focused in on saying, what are the three, four, five things that really make us unique, make our product set unique, make our people different, make our culture different. And then really getting behind that and kind of building off of that is the key thing. If you don't have that, if you're all about profit, you know, we've seen that, we've all been through all the business books. If it's like a profit initiative or something, that's really hard to get people's true, you know, buy-in, their heart into it. And so if that's the focus, it's going to be really hard to do it. But I think most companies, the founders, where they founded their product, their solution, their service, has a core of has a fundamental, like, you know, baseline to start from, and then say, well, and then what do our people, how does it make us unique? Because they are people, do they make us unique? What do we try to do differently? Like as Corey says, going back to the deliver the wow, like we're in a high stakes business, but there's a lot of money involved in it, and they expect this top notch service, but it's the little things that we still try to still hold on to now as we get bigger. It's like, what did we originally do? Well, we know our owners by name. You're not one of 10,000 NetJets, you know, owners. Like it's harder it becomes really difficult to know every employee by name and our pilots by name and everything else that we have. But how can we continue to do those things and pull you back in to say, well, this is why we just did our trap shooting summer event, because it's hard to do. It's hard to pull everybody's time aside, but you get to see these pilots maybe once face to face, maybe once a year during the holidays when we want to get everybody together, when every other company is shut down or they're off for break. We're working 24/7. It's the busiest time of year for us. So how do we keep coming back to investing both money, time, and effort into keeping our foundation truly our foundation? And that's something we have to continue to work at. Like, it just doesn't just happen. So you got to be committed to the process and not just because you read a business book and that's what you're supposed to do. You really have to do that. Otherwise, it's just going to be like everything else. That's how I would say. You can definitely change it, but you definitely have to be committed to the process and know what you're signing up for. It's not something you can just say you're doing. Everybody will feel it. Your employees will know it. Your customers will know it. You've got to live it. And that's something that we've got to always make sure we're keeping our eye on the ball.
I would echo everything Tommy said. I would add, I think that anybody can fix it if it's not there or if it's broken. I mean, as Tommy said, we started from scratch. Like, we had 10 core values that were on my wall in my office, and myself didn't even have all of them memorized. Nobody did. So when we decided to start fresh, and you mentioned this earlier, Mark, I think that's one of the reasons Tommy and I's partnership has worked really well. It's not always perfect. There's always tension, and a lot of it's good tension a lot of times. But we truly believe in our core values, and we are 100% aligned on that in the way we're going to do business. We're going to do business the right way. But when we redid all of the core values, the leadership team had to own it, and they had to be all in alignment, and then they had to speak all the time. So it became part of our new language that, starting from the top with Tommy and I, down to our executive team, down to the middle-level managers, all the way down, we were constantly talking about it. It was not overnight that it made it happen. It wasn't just going to shift. We read a book, we put new things on the wall, and everybody lives that way. It was repetitive. Every time we have a company speech, or every time I record a video to our team, we're always coming back to those core values. And when it's top of mind, then people can either choose to really live them, or they choose this isn't the place for them to work. We hire off them, we coach off them, and if we had to terminate, we terminate off the core values.
So then, moving from core values, just thinking about your core focus, your purpose, your cause, your passion, and your niche or niche, that really creates the soul of the business. Can you tell us a little bit about what your core focus is?
And it's changed every year. Like, we reevaluate that at our annual offsite. And right now, we've changed it this year where by 2030, we want to be a top 10 operator. And right now we're sitting about 24 in the country. We've never put a number on it. This is the first year that we've done that. In the past, it's been to be the most loved, or to be, you know, the most cherished, or a couple different words. But now it's like, we're really focused on, we've built the foundation. We've got an incredible team. Like, we've now had some successes. We're able to enter into the heavy jet space. So we're competing head to head against the biggest names in our business arena, like NetJets and FlexJet and PlaneSense and stuff like that. So for us to, we really get it aligned on, okay, what is it going to take? What does that look like to be a top 10 operator? And how are we going to do that by 2030? Living our core values throughout that. So there's a few steps that we've identified, and it's probably going to be through acquisition here in the next few years that we're looking at some of our competitors and what that looks like. But that's a whole new world for us. I've never gone through an acquisition or a merger or anything like that. And so there's a lot to learn. Tommy has much more experience in that arena than I do.
It has changed. I was going to say, like, that's where the evolution of it comes from. I think people get into these frameworks and think, you know, I've got to set these core values, kind of coming back to that, and I've got to stay to those. And using an example, and I'll kind of roll into that, is we used to have, it used to be team first, Mark, originally on, that was one of our first four core values. And the reason why we chose that was because we're like, hey, it's got to be team first. We were having these silos, and all right, because inherently our company has its challenges. I mean, pilots are a very specific skill set. They're not in your office every day, right? Our office is the sky. So most companies, you get people back, or they come to a foundation monthly, quarterly, daily, whatever. But that's inherently the challenge of our business, is we're located anywhere. all the time, maintenance as well. And then there's a very specific language that you said, that the common communication, the language. There's a whole different language for pilots and aviation and mechanics and sky ops that, you know, and that's great for them, but we have another half the company that is here to support that doesn't come from that background, doesn't have the schooling, doesn't have that. And so what I'm coming back to is things have to evolve. And so then eventually we said team first, and everything was like about team. And it went the wrong way, actually, Mark. It was like, people are like, well, my department's, you know, sky operations, flight operations. So like, it's them first and everybody else is just secondary. And so then we started creating these unintentional silos of like, not my problem. And it's like, whoa, that goes against our other three values, right? Or as a whole. So that changed the team alignment about 2 or 3 years ago. So kind of jumping forward, and you talk about the core focus, when we have that, that's evolved. We wanted to just be recognized, and how do we be on someone's radar? So it was like, hey, be top 10 search for, you know, private jet services. And how do you evaluate that? How do you get people around that? And we've gone through iterations is what I'm ultimately getting at. And this is our current iteration of, we feel like we have the foundation, the understanding, the systems in place to continue to say, hey, we don't know how we're going to get there yet. We know what we want to do. And there's a lot of steps in between, but let's stay focused in on that and keep marching towards that same common goal and that same outcome, and to align that stuff. What do to do that? Well, that's a 5-year goal or a 4-5-year goal from last year, but you know, that's out there a ways. And in a business where a lot of people don't stick around for 5 years, I mean, half our employees are pilots, and pilots jump from, not all, but a lot of them jump from job to job and opportunity to opportunity where the industry's at. And so then Corey and I and the team got together, but with Corey's lead, and said, hey, to get there, we've got to come up with an employee LTIP plan, long-term incentive plan, right? We're going to need this kind of work. We're going to need some buy-in. And so that was really derived. Well, you want to get there, and that sounds great, but what are the things you have to do to do that? To get there in that time frame, you're going to have to keep a lot of the key people that have helped get you there along the way. And they're constantly getting bonuses and sign-on bonuses and airliners trying to come and all these other things that are coming at you. And so if you continue to do that, and I always think everything that's the finance background, everything has to have like a logic path and like, you know, data sets that it's not often from the feel goods of my heart or where I'm thinking it's going. It's going to be data driven. There's a lot of those things that I think would put into place to kind of build towards the top 10 operator, top 15 operator nationwide. And that's what we thought we could get people around. And then we have an internal model, which is love your journey. So that's the other thing that we have in there. And it still is. That was one of our first things. It's one of our first trademarks, and it's on our walls outside in our hallways. And that just comes down to that we're in a very serious high stakes game in our business, especially, right? There's lives in it. It's a safety, like you got aircraft that are breaking, you got weather. You have all these things that most industries don't have. When I was in retail, we had the problem that we had was we were 365, 720, you know, 24/7. That was the problem that you dealt with. And yeah, you had a bad sales day when there was a bad snowstorm in the Northeast, but not like aviation when everything is shuffling. And so we come back to it and say, you have to love what you're doing. And that comes back to Corey saying, not punching the clock. Our core value of that, the subset to that is like, you have to love the business that we're in. It's not always fun. It's super unique and it's great. But you have to love the journey that we're on, because we are on a unique journey. We're one of the fastest growing companies in America. We're one of the fastest growing private aviation companies. And all that sounds great, but it has its challenges. And it's our job to continue to say, well, why are we here? And Corey's the best at reminding me of that, is like, why he loves this is because he's an aviator at heart and just loves planes. I love business. That's where I love it. I love the business side of it. And that to me is fun. So just coming back to that's the other part, is love your journey is something we stick to. And we keep reminding ourselves of, why are we here and doing all of this? And at what point at the end game is this all for? And during that journey, are you enjoying it? So we say that to both our clients and our employees, is love your journey while you're here. Whatever that is, if that's for 1 year, 5 years, if you're switching departments, you don't know where, like, we want you to say, hey, I love my time here. And we're pretty successful at that. We're not perfect. And it's not always a perfect fit as well. But I think that's how I would draw us back to probably the core focus, and probably what our company slogan or our motto is love your journey.
You talked a little bit about incentive plans, and a lot of our listeners are running small companies, 10 to 250 employees. Of course, some are much, much larger and some are a little bit smaller. But I always love the saying by Charlie Munger. And he would say, show me the incentives and I'll show you the outcomes. And when you think about that and you think about all of your employees, how does that statement hit you? How do you think about incentives broadly to align all that human energy to get to that top 10 placement on what in your industry and what it is that you do?
I love that saying, Mark, and great question. I've been in sales my whole life. And so I've been able to watch, like, people are going to work their pay plans. That's just the way we're wired, that to maximize our time at the office and to be able to get what you deserve. That being said, it's like, the thought was, what could we do to get some really good stickiness, to not just have our executive team, but all of our full-time team members really have the buy-in and want to be part of this David and Goliath story that we talk about that we are. And with that, what we did is we put 10% of the company value and we parked it for all of the employees that qualify. And it takes a full-time employee to be here for 5 years to qualify for that. The company gets appraised every year. And then their percentage of that pie of money is figured off two things. How long they're here, they're 10 years. So every year they're here longer, they get more of that piece of the pie, and then the more money they make. It has helped, I believe, what I just got finished saying to our new hire group, we want you to think like you're the business owner. Because for every dollar that you can save the business, or every dollar we can increase the profit, that is going straight to the bottom line. That's then times 10, and that's what our company is valued at. And so to be able to get the stickiness and the buy-in, and for people to want to be part of it and think like they're not just an employee, but hey, I can help control my bonus at the end. My goal is when people get ready to retire, they look back and be like, damn, that was a lot of work, but that was a lot of fun. And they feel so grateful to be a part of it. And then they get this bonus check that even shows the appreciation back to them. So we've noticed that it's helping us a lot. We have to talk about it. Same thing, like you have to keep communicating, because if you just launch it and then you never talk about it again, like it's useless. So it's something that we constantly talk about. I think it's been really a great thing, and it feels good for me to do it for the company, to for these people that have bust their ass for us for many years and many more years to come.
So Corey hit on the LTIP plan, which was a new ad, but that's just that extra piece, the foundation of our comp. This is where Corey and I do align. We always push back against like a higher salary and no performance expectation. So to match Corey and I, our competitiveness of whatever that we have is, we expect in almost any position that there's some performance element tied to it, if we can at all do that. So that's one thing that we do foundationally. And then the second thing is we looked at is we had to stay super competitive. Like during the pandemic, when we came out of the pandemic in private aviation, there was a shortage of pilots. There's a shortage of it across, it doesn't matter if you were commercial or if you were private, because of the boom of in travel and wealth creation that everybody started. So we had to be more, we had to be creative on it because we're not NetJets. We don't have Berkshire Hathaway backing. Like we can't pay the most. We can't have the best in the healthcare opportunity. We can't have all this stuff, the nicest facilities, the brand new plane. Like that's not how our company was founded. And so we then tried to say, well, there's table stakes. You've got to be at a fair compensation level or doesn't matter how great all the other stuff is. Usually that won't overcome that. So you had to meet the threshold of, okay, we always said we want to pay fair. We want to pay within the normal range of where that's at. But then what are the other additional things that we can do? And so we believe one of our biggest strengths is where we're located. If those that are outdoors enthusiasts, being located in Salt Lake City, Utah is not only one of the best economies in the country, and it has been for 10 years. It's also one of the safest places to live. It's been the best for recreation. It's a great place to raise a family. It's all these things that you have and say, well, so we try to highlight those where we can, which is, still 80% of our employees are located in Utah. We have a handset of pilots that are located out, but most of them are still here. So how can we recruit you to say why Utah is a great place? Because there's not a lot of aviation companies to join nationwide. There's a couple dozen. And so for that, we look at and we say, okay, culture, location, where you can live for your family, what stage in life. And remember, I talked about how can we sell to our pilots, which is the most competitive area we were at. Our comp increased during the pandemic for most in the industry around 35% over 3 years. These are highly compensated individuals, right? These skill sets. Not a lot of companies you have six-figure salaried incomes as your standard compensation, right? And so we had to then say, okay, what else can we do? And how can we create that huge investment. We have millions of dollars of training we have to put our pilots through every single year of like true training that you would lose, like that just like washed if they leave and they jump somewhere else. So how can we get a career path progression and see someone that pilot gets in as a light jet or a turboprop pilot, and then they can progress through us probably every, so we started tracking time to upgrade. So from 12 to 18 months, 18 months to 24 months, how quickly could we get you to the next aircraft upgrade, which in your competitor would have taken you twice as long. So then we started making that the sales point. Hey, you can do this. They might pay you a little bit more now, but you're going to be sitting in the right seat for 5 years. We could have you up two classes higher as a pilot, as a captain in the same amount of time. So you come back to compensation. To me, that's where all that art goes. It's an art form of a balance of comp, culture, opportunity, plate where you live. Because those are all the things that I factored in when I was going to join here too as well. It's no different, right? When Corey's like, well, what's the comp? Well, it wasn't my highest comp. Wasn't by far, right? But it was a place to live. It was a culture that I could help build, and I felt right. What they needed was what I could provide. Right. And so it checked three of the four boxes for me. Right. And the comp would come eventually, right. At some other point. And so I look at the same thing for every one of our employees. If you're fueling our planes on a line as an entry-level position, or you're flying our heavy jets, right. And you're 10, 15 year, 20 year pilot. I think we provide one of the few opportunities. And that's what my selling point is to them, is where a lot of our line guys are aspiring pilots. There's no other company locally that can get you from fueling planes and then be flying in our plane a year and a half, 2 years later. We create those positions and those opportunities that it kind of feeds the whole system. So that would be my explanation to comp to me in a much bigger way than just the LTIP plan. That's just like a bonus for that outlook, but everything else is like the day-to-day and the real nuts and bolts of what we do.
Well, I think it's an interesting balance between, are you familiar with the marshmallow test? The marshmallow test that was done at, I think it was at a elementary school, I think it's part of the University of Stanford. I could have that wrong, but basically kids would come in and they'd put a marshmallow in front of the kid and say, hey, you can eat that marshmallow right now. If you wait 10 minutes, we'll give you another marshmallow. If you wait a little bit, another 10 minutes, we'll give you another one after that. And so then they track these kids over a long period of time, the whole entire concept of delayed gratification. And the kids who could wait to get the second and the third marshmallow, they track them over the next, 20, 30 years plus. And they all as a group way, way outperformed the people who just were like, I'll just take the marshmallow now. Right. So the short-term income, the short-term benefit versus the long-term delayed gratification. So I find it interesting that you kind of have this setup where, yeah, you have to meet the minimum requirements for right now, but at the same time, you have an entire system for delayed gratification. And if the social science would hold for you, you end up with the best employees over a long period of time because they're here for that balanced outlook, not just the cash today. I'd be really interested, probably from our listeners or from the data throughout the EOS universe, the organizations that have some delayed gratification component to their overall compensation, I would put money on them actually outperforming those that don't.
I would agree on that for sure.
As you're growing the organization, you're on your way to top 10 in your industry, inevitably you're going to hit the ceiling. You're going to feel that sense of being stuck and frustrated, and things are not working the way they should. It's inevitable. It will happen. It has happened in your lives, in your career up to this point. And then, of course, to the degree that you can master those five leadership abilities, you'll be able to break through that ceiling each and every time. So for you, when you think about the five leadership abilities of simplify, of delegate, of predict, of systemize, of structure, what for you do you think you're going to need to really focus on in order to break through where you are today to get to that top 10? And it could be company-wise, it could be departmental, it could be personal, because oftentimes we're the thing holding the business back. So I'd love to hear from each of you what your thoughts are on where your focus will need to be in order to break through.
Our company our journey is always evolving. And so I think we have a couple key pieces that we have. So I've studied a lot of that as well and kind of seen what we've kind of gone through in regards to our growth and our progression. And I think where we're currently at right now, there's two things. One, we have this, the new technology, we have AI that's putting pressure on a bunch of different, you know, doesn't matter what you're, if you're a finance sector or you're, you know, we haven't found planes are largely super intelligent and they do a lot of self-flying, but they're not fully autonomous, right? To where they're doing all that just yet. What we're trying to do right now is figure out, one, learn about AI, how can it play a role in our industry, in our, each of our departments. And then, you know, it's a highly regulated space as well. So it's not as easy that you can just pull, you know, do whatever you want when it comes to FAA or you do scheduling or whatever. There's no, you can't supplement the, like you can't automatically sign off on a flight and release a flight for us. I won't say it'll never happen because it probably will. It's fair enough, soon enough, but not right now. I think our current ceiling is systems limitations. Some of it's capital. It's just having the capital to do it. Like we want an app, like our own app. And so we're like, you know, do you develop our own app? Can AI do it for you? And then how do you
manage it over the weekend? Yeah,
and you can, right? That's what we're literally in that right now in our IDS of our company. It's, and we're going into our mid-year planning is like, which is the right thing to do there? And that's just one sector of where AI plays a role in that. So we have a lot of the systems I think have limitations. Our FMS, our flight management system has limitations for it. How do you, and that's the heart of like our operation, right? That's planning every single trip. It's quoting every charter. It's scheduling the pilots. It's all. And so we have a lot of systems limitations that we've been able to bootstrap everything and it together. But at some point it starts to break. You've outgrown the system that it was built for. You know, we always said, oh man, when we get to 25 planes, this system that we use is good from 0 to 1 to 25 planes. And now we're at 27. And it happened really quick. And so now it's like, well, what do we do? And then that's a massive transition for us. We were on QuickBooks. We switched to NetSuite last year. So we made that, ERP transition. That's a major thing. So we're getting to now where the scale is becoming the technology, the advancement of systems is one of our bigger limiting factors. One of the things that is, you know, creates heartburn, creates a lot of repetition, double entry, whatever that takes that you need to continue in a small margin business to fine tune. So I'd say systems is kind of where we're at right now. And then there's just the constant, it's the personnel, right? We're in a space where not often most people are like lifers because half our employees are pilots and there's inherently you're not based here. They're used to a lifestyle that's, you know, go to the next opportunity, whatever that next thing is. And so how can we stay in front of that? Because when we lose pilots or we lose momentum, it pulls the company back or puts us in a stall pattern for 2 or 3 months until we solve it again. And then, you know, some things, life happens. Every day we're getting something new, something's happening in there. So we're in that area that I'd say they always say from like the 50 to 80 or $100 million company where we have all the foundational stuff we didn't have 4 or 5 years ago. Too many office spaces. We're spread out all over the place because we can't get everybody into one because of the limitation of space on airports. And so that has its challenges. How do you manage when you already have half your pilots are not in the office? Now you have half your group that supports that are all over the country and spread apart at different offices. So I think we have some of those things there that have to be solved. It would be nice to have them solved. We've been able to make it work, but it would be really nice to have everybody in one office and people collaborating face-to-face and not always over FaceTime or whatever else that you're doing, right? And so I think those are the systems things that I say that I see as the biggest challenges. And then there's the second one is just capital. We've elevated the game now where we can find ways. Everybody can go if you ask them tomorrow and said, hey, can you scrape together $100? They can find it. They can sell something. They can find a way. But when you start taking that to a common person and in our game, just saying $100 would represent, let's just call it $1 million. And then you start saying, well, can you scrape together $10 million, $20 million? The capital intensive part of our business is real and there's nothing that's changing that. And so that's a real challenge for us to continue to drive forward with newer aircraft, newer programs, newer office space, new builds, and come up with the capital that we've, Corey and I have been able to bootstrap together for the last, you know, 7 years and Corey for the last 17 years, that it can't be done by just rubbing penny. We have to have institutional investors or commercial banking services more and more readily, you know, present. I think those are the two things that I would say. So I'd say systems and then access to capital are the two biggest things that I think about right now.
I would say the simplify and systemize are probably the two next things. A lot of what Tommy was just saying especially with the change of AI, we have so many different softwares that we subscribe to. It's like, what can we bring in internal? How can we all bring it back to just one, which is something we're looking at as the future grows. But for us to really go from where we're at right now, number 24 in the country to number 10, like our systems have to be so tight. Our SOPs have to be tight. The right people, right seat has to be better than ever. And then let's keep it simple as we can throughout all of our processes, through our pay plans, through where it just makes sense, where it doesn't take an hour to do something that we could do in 5 or 6 minutes.
Now, when you think about both of you mentioned AI, and it's obviously the thing that everybody is talking about for the last couple of years, do you plan on outsourcing that AI development and integration? Do you plan on hiring someone that's just going to come in and integrate that for you? How do you think about it? How do you attack it? Or is it literally just, you know, someone on a laptop on a weekend?
Yeah, great question, Mark. And that's what we're internally debating right now. We have 5 of our different managers in different departments that are all very, very smart at AI. And so they get together once a month and they're kind of brainstorming, and they're like, we're putting together internal processes and also rules for how we use AI within the company. But the next step, even just like for this app that we want to build and all the other stuff, we're either going to outsource it, or my vote would be we bring in one person that really understands it, that then can work with the other team of 5 that have been kind of leading the charge, and see if we could do it internally.
Yeah, I've found that people are really good at the first 80%, you know, just getting and creating a Claude account and getting Claude code going or Cursor or something. And they get like this working prototype, but that last 20%, man, that is so hard for people. They kind of get stuck and then they abandon it. And then you end up sort of with the unfulfilled promise of what AI could do in a business.
Mark, it's funny you say that. We were literally in meeting our level 10 last week, our executive level 10. And that was from our team, as Corey was speaking about, that was the feedback that they kind of gave, is like, we can get 80% of the way there. It's that final 20% when you actual app rollout or systems rollout that all the fine tuning takes. And so, and Corey says that we are literally right now, that's like one of our biggest topics. It's in 2 weeks when we have our mid-year, that'll be one of our IDS topics that we'll probably spend hours on and making sure we're aligned on what we think it is. And then there's a very, very good chance when we get to our third quarter summary or our end of year summary or next year planning, that'll look different. Like I'm saying, like, that's what we've learned in that, is it'll definitely look different. I don't know what it is, but it'll keep us moving forward, right? It keeps us taking steps forward and not getting stuck in perfection of it has to be this way or we're not ready to launch. Like, how do we make steps forward? How do we learn? What do we don't know what we don't know yet. For sure, the systems, all the plugins, all the AI, all it's all going to change between now and the end of the year. And so just know that that's going to be the case. But as long as we're still moving forward, And we're doing it, we're also not just throwing money away. We're, again, we have to be accountable for every dollar that's spent. Like, what are we trying to do? And I think it'll be a combination of it. I don't think, like, most times it's just like, this is the right answer. If it was that simple, everybody would do it. I think it's going to be a dynamic of, yeah, maybe we'll get someone internally. Can we find the right person? Do they fit our culture? This is what we're trying to do right now. They might have a totally different thing. They want to work for a SaaS company that's, you know, worth, you know, that's got a $1 billion valuation or whatever. And so we're gonna have to find that person. And I think that's where Corey and I were saying, well, I think it's gonna be that combination. We're gonna start looking for it. It might be internally, it might be externally. We're gonna also source out our current vendors and partners right now that do that work, that are pitching their products, services, and see, does it meet our timeline? Does it meet our budget? You know, what are the key things that we ultimately need? And then we'll decide what the right step forward is. But we don't have that answer right now.
Now, a quick question for you. You've obviously been implementing EOS for quite a while. Are you using an implementer? Are you self-implementing?
We do use an implementer. We've tried it both ways. We started really strong with an implementer, and then he retired, basically. We did a few sessions with just us doing it. We felt that it was worth the money to have the right implementer. Of course, it's got to be the right one, but it takes off the burden of like Tommy leading it, where he can be more focused in the meeting instead of on leading the meeting. And we can kind of go on our little tangents as we do it. It's been good for us.
I just want to add on to the implementer and then maybe a little bit, Mark, that I think I find the most common there. So the fortunate thing I've had is I've seen small mom and pop companies being a part of these, starting with 5 or 10 employees, growing them up to hundreds at GameStop. I had at the peak around 5,000 employees reporting through me in that organization. That was a 50,000 organization. And when you have that kind of skill and that kind of tenure, they've been doing it for many, many years. Most of these systems they already have, right? They have their own. They have their IT department was twice the size of our company right now. I just to keep, you know, up to the day to day. So not a lot of comparisons there, but I do come back to like the implementer thing was big as Corey. I add to that. It is so critical when you're, I'd say anybody that's watching this, that's looking to try to find an implementer, anybody can just run through the standard EOS framework because that's how they built it. It's really simple and it's great, including using 90IO and the mobile app and some other things that are really nice. You can create your own now, probably easier than ever. Like if we would have had Claude, you know, 5 years ago, we probably would have tried to build that, right? But right now it's super cost effective and it's great. But I come back to like, we tried some in between and we just found that it wasn't a good fit for us. Either their contribution wasn't right, the cultural match of our people wasn't maybe right. And so I think that was really for us was the thing was finding that perfect cultural fit for us. And someone that could, our first one had aviation experience, worked for I don't know if it was Boeing or whatever, Corey can remember. So that we thought was attractive because they could kind of speak the language. But the ones that we have now have nothing to do with aviation, no experience at all, but they have business application and different things that, and they can speak and they take a genuine interest in our business. So it's not just the one that checks in right before their quarterly or our mid-year and says, hey, you know, we got this meeting coming up. I'm talking to him weekly, monthly. I'm not saying you have to do that, but he's curious. Hey, how did this change? I saw this on your scorecard. And so when we find someone that takes a genuine interest in us, not just the EOS system, I think that we found that to be the most successful outcome. And then the second thing I always remind people is you're right. We're very structured, but our lives are chaos. Like all the time, Corey and I are in different areas. And if we didn't have that one like accountability, like you just said, of like, oh, our implementer's coming. We already set the meeting 6 months ago and now we've got to change it because it tries to pressure us. We're 2 weeks out and we're already like trying to change and move it around. And like, it holds us back to that. And then every time we come, our team leaves and goes, my wife's always asking, like, and she's a very successful professional in her career too, and works for a large company. And she's like, why do you do that? And I'm like, honestly, it's the time that we get together that is literally no distraction. It's unequivocally the best 12 hours we spend together. We pull the group back in, we pull each other back in to kind of connect again because we're all over the place. And we say, okay, what are the key focuses? What do we need to be working on? Let's realign on that stuff. And believe it or not, we need it every quarter. We need it to pull us back in. And our business is changing so fast that what we thought we knew, the goals change. And so for us, the movement of goalposts and getting us back together all the time is part of what the industry that we're in. It's almost like a must. Like we can't imagine not doing it. So that's like the only thing that we say is a non-negotiable for Corey and I is, when we plan these things, you're there. Like we plan everything around it for the family, everything else. We try to make it. And we say, stick to those things. So that's where I would just add to say it's that as much as anything else. The systems, the things it brings you is great, but the accountability to each other, to an implementer, to all of that has massive impacts. And then use the systems that they provide. 90IO is awesome for quick visibility, constant communication, because you come back to that communication fabric of what we do. That is what we work on every day. And those are the systems that are already created for you that you can utilize. You can look at sales, you can look at maintenance, we can look at finance and accounting, we can look at cash flow. All that stuff's there to communicate, to keep that constantly, you know, top of mind for our teams. And I think that's been, I think, the biggest add for us. And why we still just keep adding people to the system is we love this, the tools you guys have created and the framework that you've created. And it's simple and it's easy. And we tweak a little bit here and there because we're unique and we say, well, you don't have to follow it exactly like this, but this is how we're going to do it. And it's worked great for us. And I highly recommend it to almost everybody Corey and I meet. If they're already on it, we have a common language we talk about. And if they're not, we definitely say, give it a look and give it a focus. But you can't go it and think it's going to fix it itself. You have to, the team has to be bought in, the founder has to be bought in, or it's just going to be another system and something that's going to be a, you know, splash in the pan. And then 6 months later, you'll say it didn't work for you. You got to be bought in.
Echoing what Tommy said, but the consistency, I think, is the other thing that it's really helped. Like us, making sure that our executive LTIM meetings happen every single week. Very rarely will we miss that meeting. Something big will be going on if we're doing that. But the consistency of how we run those meetings every single time, we're getting to the core root of the problem. We're talking about it. We're trying to come up with solutions towards the end of it. And it's really kept us on track. And then our other departments are now doing it much better than they were before. So I mean, if you're a company that's considering doing EOS, highly, highly recommend it, but actually do it. Don't just take the bits and pieces, bite the whole thing off and try it at first. It's been a great thing for our company for sure.
Well, we appreciate that and super happy that you're getting what you want from your business. Once you have the ability to just understand that it's just an issue, you have all the systems and tools and mindsets in place to go and execute on that, break through that ceiling each and every time because you know it's inevitable. It's just a great skill set. I mean, it is creates a resilience and it creates just really this unstoppable force to the degree that I have no doubt you're going to get to the top 10. And hey, why shoot so low?
We'll get there and then we'll readjust our goals.
There you go. There you go. All right, Tommy and Corey, thank you for the conversation and we'll see you.
Thanks, Mark. We'll see you.
Thanks for the invite, Mark. Appreciate it.
If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.